Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Hi, I'm Imri, the host of the Wannabe Podcast, the podcast that takes you from where you are now to where you want to be in 30 minutes or less. Thank you so much for listening again this week. I'm so excited that you're here. Remember to get your tickets to a live recording of Wannabe on June 2nd at the Artworks Classrooms in London Bridge. Me and brand and marketing expert Priska Moyesa will be walking you through how to use video and podcasting to build your brand. We will be sharing our personal content timelines and templates, and we'll show you how we use social media while we were working full time. Also, we'll tell you how to pivot your ideas so you can finally get paid. Visit wannabelive.eventbrite.co.uk to grab a ticket while they're still there. Today, I am again joined by Dorcas Schoeller-Fapson. Dorcas studied criminology at university, but wanted to pursue her passion for acting. She was granted a scholarship to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in New York. Dorcas is best known for her role as Sophie in season 3 of MTV Sugar. Also, fun fact, Lupita Nyong'o was in season 1 of MTV Sugar. She also hosted Ndani TV's The Juice and has appeared in Banana Island Ghost and My Wife and I. Dorcas has racked up a fantastic 217,000 fans on Instagram. In today's episode, you'll learn why having a degree still means something and what to do when an opportunity knocks and you cannot take it, and why you should not limit your dreams. Let's go. Who did you want to be before you became who you are today, and why?
Oh, that's a good question. That is a really good question. In my field, who did I want to be, or just anyone?
Anyone.
Oh, who did I want to be? This is going to sound so stupid. Well, not stupid, already. But you know, Tupac.
Really?
I don't know if I wanted to be him or be with him, or yeah, I just wanted to be a part of him, you know, in close proximity to him.
Why?
Because I love him. I've just always loved him. I just love his music, his poetry, his movies, everything about him, what he stood for, what he fought for. I just love Pac. Pac is life.
Wow.
It's just life. So yeah, I don't know if I would say I wanted to be him, but I wanted to be around him. I wanted to be with him, you know, just, you know.
Wait, how old are you?
I know, I'm going off course, but yeah, I wanted to be with Park. But if I could say I wanted to be, so I've never really, that's a good question. I've never really sat down and say I want to be this person, because I've never really, you know, I mean, I look up to people, but I haven't idolized someone to the point of wanting to actually become them, you know? Yeah. So I can't answer that, if I'm honest. Like, there's no one that I'd really said, oh my gosh, I wish I was her, I wish I was him. There's just
That's so interesting. No one, yeah. Funnily enough, a lot of people I speak to on the podcast don't have like a specific person.
Yeah. I mean, there's a load of people that I look up to, that sure. I could take like bits and pieces from and, you know, become one big ball of, you know, the 10 different people, fine, but there's no one particularly that I would say I would want to be that person.
Sure, no, that makes sense. I don't think I have one, and someone actually threw the question back at me and I was like, I don't know. I ask this every week. And I don't have an answer.
It's a tough one. That's actually a good question, but yeah. No,
are there know. Like the so with the people that you do admire and that you look up to, mm-hmm. what are kind of the most common qualities or traits that you really see in them that you would want for yourself?
Ambition, mm-hmm. determination, independence, sense of humor, sarcasm. humble, down to earth, real, relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are like all in one, like just someone that I can vibe with, relate to, learn from, as well as have a laugh with, you know, just different characteristics.
Yeah, no, they sound really good. They sound like a really good person.
Yeah, yeah, fun person overall. Someone that enjoys what they do and does what they love and loves what they do.
Yeah. So let's move on to doing what you love. So I know you because you're an actress.
Yeah.
But I know you also have a background in criminology.
I do, yeah.
And I wanted to get to know a bit more about the criminology side. And how have you taken that forward up until today, I guess?
Yeah, so I studied criminology at uni. So before acting, I was determined to be a criminal lawyer. And then the idea of law school came into play and I was like, yeah, that's long. So I ain't trying to do that. So I kind of followed my passion, but I still have a huge passion for criminology. The reason why I studied criminology was because I wanted to work with young offenders. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in an inner city neighborhood. So I grew up in Tottenham.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I watched people get arrested from me and my brothers, you know, just friends, family get arrested, stabbed, and, you know, just loads of different things around me. So I wanted to be a product of positivity. So I wanted to bring change to my community. I wanted to work with people, you know, because a lot of times these people get arrested, that nobody listens to why they've done what they've done. They just say, oh, that's a criminal, he's a black boy wearing a hoodie, he's standing on the street corner selling drugs. No one's actually taken time to understand why they're doing what they're doing. So for me, studying criminology, I wanted to kind of work with young people and, you know, rehabilitate them. And, you know, because, you know, like young people that do drugs and stuff, they are businessmen. They're just channeling it in the wrong way. And I don't think anybody sits down to, you know, really analyze that and, you know, think of how they can turn it around for the good, you know. So that's why I studied it, because I wanted to work with people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still in my plans, you know, long term, to work with, you know, younger people and, you know, young offenders and stuff. But I have a passion as well. I have to live my life as well, just as everyone else is living their lives. I can't just, you know. So I decided to follow my passion, which is acting. But I still definitely want to use my criminology to work with young people that have been in the system and that are still in the system or whatever. So
yeah, nice. That's really noble. I think all of my family, like my mum worked with young people. My stepdad's a social worker. So I've been around it a lot.
Right.
It kind of put me off personally.
Really?
Yeah, no, I just... But I do work with a lot of young people for the challenge, which is like the National Citizen Services thing, and teach them like enterprise skills. And I'm always like supremely impressed. I'm kind of slowly meandering into kind of the young people's work,
right?
By, I don't know, I feel like it's partly because of my parents' influence of just always being around like young people who are sometimes troubled, sometimes they're just really gifted,
sometimes just misunderstood, you know. Just like, you know, they just need someone that they can
just relate to.
You know, someone that's been there, done that, and, you know, just relatable.
It's super rewarding work. Like I've done it for the past two summers and hopefully gonna do it for a third summer of teaching them like business skills and helping them channel that energy and that intelligence. Like, some of these kids are so
smart. So you'll be so surprised. Oh, like, they're so smart. Like, they're just,
I was,
you know,
surprised. I had a lot of prejudice. I'm not even gonna lie. I was really taken aback when I started working with them. So I think it's really nice to hear that someone like still cares. Mm-hmm. And that people care and want to pursue that.
Definitely. Like, one of my long-term goals is to have like a drama school long term, but for like people, so someone like me that came from an inner city neighborhood, I can afford to go to drama school because they're so expensive.
Yeah.
So long term, I would want to build like a drama school or like a, you know, just a extracurricular school that has, you know, young footballers, young whoever wants to study arts, you know, just to get them off the streets and into something like that's extracurricular, you know, but affordable.
Like, absolutely.
If I could do it for free, then I would, you know, but, you know, just affordable, because I feel like that's another thing, because they don't have anything to do, that they just turn to, you know, whatever makes quick money, or, you know, so yeah.
That's true. I really like the idea of creating a bigger institution that is, it's kind of like at the end of Black Panther where they created that school. Spoiler alert, sorry.
Sorry, people. I mean, Wakanda forever.
Yes. Sorry for spoiling that. But creating like an institution and creating a legacy for these kids and these people, because like there really isn't that many.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to touch on the drama school, because acting is what you do.
Yeah.
And I believe you got like a scholarship to a school.
Yeah,
in New York.
I did. I auditioned for AMDA, American Academy of Dramatic. Oh, forgive me, I don't know the or whatever. American Musical Dramatic something anyway. Yeah, I got a scholarship for that. But I again, when you get a scholarship, that's for the tuition.
Yeah.
So it's still really expensive, like to live out there of course. Like just like because it was three years, so I couldn't afford to do it because I still was, you know, struggling to be an actor. I wasn't even sure of what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to act, but I was thinking, okay, what if I fail? What if I, you know, I was battling with what I wanted to actually really do. I knew I wanted to start acting, but I couldn't afford it, and I just. It just wasn't possible for me. Yeah, so I couldn't do it. But I ended up doing a 6-week course at ADA, which is American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York. So I didn't do the scholarship because it was just not feasible for me. But I ended up doing like an intense 6-week course. Yeah.
And how was that?
It was really good. It was really beneficial for me. So like now I would love to go back to and do drama school because I feel like I still have so much to learn and, you know, brush up on like my skills and just, you know, touch up on. So I definitely want to go to a drama school now, like I can afford it, thank God. So yeah, I'm gonna definitely like do a year somewhere and just, yeah, touch up and, you know, learn. I don't feel like there's, I feel like you're always learning, you know, so I feel like it would be so beneficial for me to go to a drama school. And I feel like a lot of people when hiring as well look at that, like they look at where you've trained and what you've done, and you know, so I feel like it'll be beneficial for my acting CV.
That's so interesting. So I know nothing about acting because I'm actually not creative in any way, shape or form. I've strictly been like academia and then straight from academia into like the world of like 9-to-5 life, which sucks. So for anyone that may not have like any idea as to what it takes to, you know, even apply for drama school, like what is that process like? What do you have to do? Do you have to prepare something? Do you have to perform? What is the audition process like?
Normally with drama schools, they do like, so I know with the drama school that I did the audition for, that was AMDA, you had to prepare two contrasting pieces. So like maybe a serious monologue and a funny monologue, you know, just two very contrasting pieces. And they want to see like your range and where you're at and like how much training you're going to, what level you're going to into the drama school, you know, just see where you're really at. But for me, I hate auditions. So I get so nervous in auditions. My palms start sweating. I start stammering. I get, you know, I don't know why. It's just a thing for me. Like I get really nervous. So I always say, I get it with the audition process. Like you have to see where you're at, but I wouldn't really, because I know once I get in front of the camera, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But in the audition, I'm just like jelly. Like I'm just like, oh no. Yeah, I get really nervous. But so yeah, I mean, even if you audition for a drama school, you don't get in. I don't think that's a testament to your acting credibility.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take that and say, okay, because I didn't get in, I can't act or whatever. I wouldn't take that because for someone like me, I've been to loads of auditions. I haven't got them because I get so nervous in auditions. But then, you know, for the ones I have got, as soon as I get in front of the camera, it's a different thing, you know? Yeah. So that's it.
I had no idea that that's what you had to do. I mean, I watch a lot of like school, like shows about school. Like I'm saying this, like I watch like serious shows. I watch like Glee and a show called Smash, which is actually mostly about the theatre and the process of auditioning and even just like going through the motions of like being on set. It just seems so grueling. And so I have to confess that I just left my job. So the last week I was like, this is a washout. I actually don't work anymore. So whatever. Mm. So we started watching Sugar.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And my colleague at work was like obsessed. She's like, oh my God, it's coming back. Like we need to hatch up because it's coming back. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about Sugar because it was fantastic. And you were my favorite.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to know how that came about.
Yeah.
And you know, what made you take that role?
Sugar was really a blessing for me. When I got the scholarship for AMDA, and obviously I couldn't do it, I ended up doing the 6-week intense course that I told you about. So I moved out to New York. So I was in New York for about 3 or 4 months. So while I was there, I had an agent in London. And my agent called me one day and she was like, oh, there's this audition that I'd really like you to do. Can you fly back to London for the weekend and, you know, just do the audition? I was like, do you think I'm Bill Gates' daughter? Like, why do you think I have that money to fly back for something that's not guaranteed and then fly back to New York? I just don't have that kind of money. I was broke, struggling, trying to, you know, chase my dream in New York. So I was like, I can't do that. So I said to her, I could do a video a toba myself. And so I ended up, I had no one to read for me because I lived alone. So I ended up filming the part. So it was two people, a duologue. So it was two, I ended up filming one part, recording a voice note on one part, and then recording myself being the person I was auditioning for.
Right. This took a while. Very complicated.
It's the imagery is just a lot, but it took a while, but I got there in the end. So I did a self-tape, I sent it to my agent and she sent it over to them, and they liked the audition and they flew me out to Lagos, and the rest is history. So
nice. That's a beautiful story.
And that's because, like, before then I'm Nigerian, my parents are Nigerian obviously, but I had no plans to go back to Nigeria and do acting or be in the entertainment industry there. Anyway, my plan was, look, I'm going to New York, I'm gonna be in Hollywood in the next 5 years and that's that. And that plan obviously didn't work out, and I ended up in Nigeria, you know, which was a blessing, you know, which is a blessing in disguise. So yeah, it was really good for me.
Oh, it sounds great. I guess the Nigerian film industry is like massive.
Yeah,
like, I've only been to Lagos once. I'm not going back.
I'm so sorry. Why?
I'm so sorry.
Like, you didn't like it?
I did not.
Oh my gosh. Were you on the island?
I was not. I was in Ikeja.
Oh, Ikeja isn't bad.
Yeah, I just didn't. It was not.
You didn't have the right people taking you out. That's
let's,
why.
Let's
you
go with that.
No, yeah, I'm going to put it up. Because if you came with me, I promise you want to live there.
I
promise you.
We will see, but I have already made up my mind that I'm not returning.
No, I'm changing your mind. I'm going to change your mind. You have to change your mind.
Lagos was doing a lot that 2 weeks I was there. And yeah. Oh. But I was going to say, whilst I was out there, I think we went to like a African film award ceremony.
Okay.
That was on the island, and that was really good fun. And it was weird to me because I was coming from the UK. I don't know anything about Nollywood. I've seen a few films. I was tickled by them. Some of them are ridiculous. And that's really all I've known about like the industry. FA's aunt is a director out there, and she brought us to film sets and things. So she brought us to this award ceremony. I was like, this is like a whole industry, like it's actually like this huge thing, and with someone who has like no idea, and everyone's like, oh my god, it's this person. Like, I have no idea who any of these people
are. That was like me when I first went.
And it's so overwhelming. But you mentioned Hollywood being like the goal and the dream. Is that why not Nollywood, and is it still both, or
it's definitely still both. I think like Nollywood, like you said, some of them you would laugh and think this is ridiculous, but then you know we are coming up, it's up and coming, it's the second biggest industry in the world now. You know, but it didn't happen overnight. It's still a work in progress. You know, obviously everyone wants to be in Hollywood, you know, that's not a bad thing. It's not a crime to want to be in the best of the best, you know. But Nollywood is fantastic, and it is up and coming. It is, you know, we're making fantastic films right about now, and you know, it's up and coming. So I'm happy to be in both. Like, I'm happy to, you know, British wood, indie wood, everything. I want to do everything. I don't want to be in a box. I don't want to just be that Nollywood actress. I want to be the Hollywood girl, the British girl, you know, the Bollywood, everything. I feel like if you're an actor, you should be able to, you know, be diverse and, you know, change.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Learn more, go to nytimes.com/worth it.
Seamlessly between, you know.
Not be typecast.
Yeah, not be typecast and not be boxed into a certain, you know.
Have you found that so far, like since Sugar, have you been like typecast in any way?
Yeah, kind of. But I feel like it's difficult for me because when you meet me, I don't, you know, obviously on Sugar, I speak with an accent and everyone's like, oh, Sophie's so fine. Sophie, ah, you can't speak English. You know, people meet me and they're like, oh, you can't speak English. I'm like, yeah. I'm British. I'm not, you know, I'm Nigerian as well, but I was born and raised in the UK. Yeah. So my natural accent is British, you know. So people see me like, ah, you are forming accent. You're pretending you're British. I'm like, no, I'm not pretending. This is how I actually speak. You know, so I don't feel like I've been typecast, but I feel like it's very easy to get comfortable in Nollywood. Definitely very easy. I mean, once you have a name for yourself, you know, you get scripts and it's easy to say yes to everything, but I'm not that kind of person. I like to be very specific in what I do. So I don't just take any and everything just to stay relevant and just to have my name in this film and that film. I'm very, very picky with what I do. I want to be in the creme de la creme. I want to be in the best ones. I want to be in the memorable ones. I don't want to be in all 100 movies that no one's going to remember. I want to be in one great one that everyone's going to remember, you know? So, I don't think I'm typecast. Thank God.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I'm back in London now, so I'm going to be doing a few things here. So I'm trying to, you know, move around.
That's good. Can you talk about anything?
Not at the moment. Okay. No, I can't. But don't worry. Fine. God's grace, God willing, by the end of the year, you'll hear a few things.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I'm so excited. Well done.
Thank you.
What has been your greatest achievement to date?
In life or in life? In life, I would say graduating.
Oh, that's good.
Because that was tough for me, man. Uni was... I was fighting every day for that degree. So for me to graduate, for me to even go to uni, for me to even finish college was, you know, I just think it was a big thing for me because, you know, in secondary school, I would have hated me. So, Yeah. So looking back on who I was and where I am now, I just think, you know, graduating and just taking the steps I've taken with my career, you know, I just think that's a great achievement for me.
Nice. Congratulations. Graduating is hard. I fought through depression for most of my uni life. So it is a smooth miracle that anyone gets through that process, actually. So congratulations and well done on that and making it. Can you tell me about a time in your life that you felt like you just really wanted to like give up or quit or just kind of like just pack it in? Maybe with regards to acting, actually.
That happens quite a lot. You know, with acting, nothing's really guaranteed. You have to kind of wait for roles to come up and you have to wait for auditions to come up and you're wondering when the next job is going to be or, you know, you might have a really quiet period and then a really busy period, you know, and not just for acting because I host as well. So it's the same thing with hosting. You might have a really quiet period of, you know, you might be really broke, like waiting for a job and then you might be really busy. Like I would say like... it's just patience. Like you just have to be patient. You have to save, you have to, you know, and be proactive as well. Like you have to not just sit around and wait for jobs. I feel like that happens a lot for me because, you know, well, it used to happen a lot for me because I'll be like, oh, like waiting around for the next thing and not knowing when the next job is going to come. So, you know, it's a constant battle. It's not something that's happened once and I can say, oh, that really got me down. It's a constant battle, you know, it's something that happens to everyone in the industry, you know. No one's, well, unless you're really up there, then but it happens. Like on your way up there, you're gonna have slow periods, you're gonna have high periods, you're gonna have, you know, ups and downs, but that's constant, you know. It's a test of your character, you know, how you overcome those tough periods and, you know, just keep pursuing and keep pushing and keep positive and stay determined and stay proactive, you know. I'm a very, very proactive person, so like even though I do go for auditions and I do wait for the next role to come up, I, you know, actively try and get myself out there doing work and networking and, you know, just trying to stay active, like not just sitting down waiting for someone to call me for an audition. Like you're going to sit down and dry up, you know. You better get out there and, you know, work and network and, you know, write your own script or write your own play or, you know, just work, just have something, you know, because opportunity favors the prepared. You have to be prepared for the opportunity to come, you know. So for me, like, I write a lot, so I'm writing my own scripts, I'm writing my own films, I'm writing my own plays. I haven't written a lot, but, you know, I'm in my spare time, I try to, you know, at least a day, 2 hours write, you know, just so if the opportunity arises, I can say, hey, I've got my play, you want to sponsor it, you know. Just be prepared for whatever, you know, be prepared for what you prayed for. So
that's really good. That's actually really solid advice, actually, because I think in anything in general, a lot of us aren't that proactive. We're always kind of waiting for people yeah. to just give us an opportunity. Yeah. There's almost like a small element of entitlement that even comes exactly. like I'm expected to have a job yeah. or like I expect to get a job. And it's like, actually, you actually have to apply. You have to go through the motions. You have to yeah. do the process. Mm-hmm. And I think not a lot of us do take a lot of time out to just kind of dedicate to what it is that we're passionate about, or dedicate yeah. to our craft.
Yeah, you have to remember that no one owes you anything.
Exactly.
So no one has to help you. Then people might help you, but no one has to.
Yeah.
You have to help yourself. Yeah. You have to want it for yourself more than anyone. No one's going to want it more than you want it. So you have to apply that. And
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that's really good. And actually, I don't think anyone's ever said that before. So thanks yeah. for dropping that one yeah, on the podcast. I wanted to talk about the instability side of things a little bit more, because mm-hmm. that sounds kind of insane to deal with, to yeah, be honest. And I think a lot of people, a lot of us don't always have like the highs and lows, unless you're like freelance or like you said, in acting and yeah. hosting and in entertainment, where you're kind of really dependent on what's available to a degree mm-hmm. or creating opportunities for yourself. But we create things. Like I created this podcast and we built this like network, and it's still here in my house. Like, we're still hustling. But yeah, people can look in and be like, oh my God, you're doing this. You're doing amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all of this stuff still like exists in my home. Like, we still like are not like blowing. We're not blowing in cash. Yeah. Like, I have sponsors, but they don't give me like so much money that I can like live day to day. And I think it's really hard. It's really hard as the individual that people are looking at to be like, oh my God, you're doing so amazing.
Yeah.
But like you said, you're still constantly fighting through this instability. So yeah. how do you kind of deal with, you know, what people might be perceiving of you, and also what is the reality? Do you ever kind of let people into the other side?
Yeah, no, I pride myself on keeping it 100, you know, like mm-hmm. I don't try and be these, you know, Instagram girls that have all these cars and shoes and bags on Instagram. Yeah. There's no food in the fridge.
Yeah.
No, I'm the other way around. My fridge is going to be full and I will have nothing on Instagram. But I'm not like... Like I said, there is highs and lows. Everyone has that. Like, I'm not ashamed to say I've been broke. I've been having no food in my fridge. Yeah. Yes, and I've struggled through that and I've made it out. And then, you know, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, but that's not the end. And what I will say is, like, if you do have a high point, you save. Like, I save, like, more than anything. That's one thing I can say. My dad taught me to save. You know, always save for a rainy day. I always, always, always have a backup regardless. Yeah. You know, so I just feel like people... I get it. Like, it's so easy to fall into depression when things are not like rushing and knocking at your door.
Yeah.
And then it's also really easy to fall into the having to maintain this lifestyle, you know, act rich and look rich and, mm-hmm. you know, even when you're not, you know, and I get that, because some people fake it till they make it. I totally get that. But I don't feel like I fall into that category, because I just feel like look, if I'm broke, I'll say, look, sis, I can't, like, I'm broke. Yeah. You understand? Like, sis, we all struggling. We're all in this struggle together, you know? I'm not ashamed to say that. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people are afraid to say when they're broke or when they're struggling, because they have a facade they have to keep up, you know?
Yeah.
They have to keep up with the appearances and keep up with the, you know, looking rich and all of that. Like, you know, but, you know, it depends on who you are. Like, I know who I am, so I don't feel like I have to have a facade. You know, if I'm rich, I'm like, hey, let's go eat. Like, you know, I'm balling today. Let's go Nando's. That's as far as it goes. No, joking. But, yeah, you know.
Nando's like, is solid. I've
yeah, Nando's is good. Everyone likes Nando's. But, yeah, no, sometimes I'll be like, yeah, you know, let's all go out. It's on me. Fine. Other days I'll be like, narcissist, you got me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just don't have it, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But yeah, no, I get people that have to fake it till they make it. There's a lot of people actually in the industry that, you know, are faking it till they make it. And I feel like there's a lot of pressure from like online, social media, and, you know, people that you don't know saying, you know, whatever about you. I feel like that's a lot of, you'd be very surprised how many celebrities are actually quite, not who you think they are. But, you know, each to their own. I don't judge, you know, whatever you got to do, you got to do.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Only because we slightly sit on the peripheries of like UK entertainment industry, where we've kind of, because we built this up by ourselves, and now we've managed to kind of make inroads here and there, and like we get invited to things. And I'm kind of just, I'm actually now, like, I think before I started this whole process of building the network and building a podcast and many podcasts in that process, I was kind of like super starstruck all the time. Like, oh my God. Mm. Oh my God. Mm. Like, and I would be so scared to speak to people. Now I'm like, they're just like kind of normal.
Yeah. Well,
like
literally,
actually insanely normal.
Yeah. Literally everyone goes through the same thing at different levels. You know, the richer, you know, the more money we come across, the more fantasy. Yeah. Like, you know, like the bigger you get, the more you have to maintain the lifestyle. You have to maintain the image. You have to, you know, and they might not have the means to maintain the lifestyle or the image, but the bigger you become, the bigger, you know, the bigger the problems you face. You know,
exactly.
You just, but it's, each to their own. You know, some people are not faking it. Some people, it's real, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but I just, you know.
Yeah. Each to their own. That's what you.
Yeah.
That's good, though. Like, I think we got into a conversation. Me and my guest co-host comes in once a month. Her name's Prisca. And she was saying, you know, a lot, especially with women on social media, it's so important that we actually be very transparent about the process, because a lot of people are looking at us and seeing what we're doing and kind of wanting that, but not realizing that, like you said, there are times where, like, I've had no food in the fridge.
Yeah.
Like, up until last year, I didn't have any food in this fridge. Like, it was empty for a while. And, like, noodles were my life.
Indomie?
Yeah.
Shout out to Indomie.
Yeah. Even, like, when I was living in the Caribbean after uni, I was there for 2 years. And everyone's like, oh my God, you're living in the Caribbean. Like, you must have the best life. And I was like, I was living in my grandma's really nice house. It was new build. I had no furniture. I had a bed. I had a chest of drawers and a kettle. There was no cooker. There was no fridge.
Wow.
Like, and people were like, oh my God, you're living in the Caribbean. You must be living the life. I'm like, I'm actually living on noodles. I'm boiling a kettle on the floor.
I think that has a lot to do with social media as well. You know, like perceptions and just thinking, you've made it because you're in another country and it's hot and, you know, it's just,
I played into it, I'm not gonna lie.
I think everyone can play into it to a certain extent, but, you know, when you have to keep it real. Like you said, you were living on noodles. I feel like, you know, it happens to the best of us. It's just about keeping it real. Like, I'm not trying to sell any dreams, I'm trying to sell reality, you know? That's what happens in real life.
I wanted to know an action that you would recommend for listeners that might be aspiring actors or actresses in this world, and what action can they take to, I guess, pursue that fully, and something that will actually help them, something they can do today whilst they're listening.
For anyone that wants to get into acting, hosting, I feel like with social media being such a huge influence in today's society, I feel like you should use that as your tool. Like, there's YouTube free, Instagram free, Snapchat free. Promote yourself, do monologues, promote your plays. If you want to do poetry, post, record yourself, put yourself out there, tag directors, follow directors, DM directors. They might think you're a stalker, but if you're good, they'll take a second look.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like they should just use the tools that are available to them and just really, really zoom in on them and use them to the best. Just use your own tools.
Nice.
And just push yourself out there, network, go to networking events. Meet and speak to people. You know, if you're shy, work on speaking to people publicly, introducing yourself. I know that's something I really struggle with. I hate going out to people and being like, hey, my name's Dorcas and I'm an actor. Like, I just really feel like it's a bit cringe. So I just, you know, that's something I'm working on aside from, you know, I just don't like, I just never really like that. So something I'm working on personally. But just get yourself out there and just push yourself out there.
Yeah, that's really good advice, actually. That's a really good action to actually just use what's available.
Yeah, I think people, like, just look at, you know, I know some people use Instagram and YouTube, like, effectively, but a lot of people just use it to stunt on people that don't even know them.
Yeah.
And people that don't even care, you know. But if you use it wisely, it's so beneficial. Like, it's so, so beneficial. Like, if you want to start a business, you know, put your business up there. If you want to, I feel like acting is really easy. Like, just film a monologue, any monologue. You know, there's loads of monologues on the internet. Film yourself, put it on Instagram, tag 10 directors that you like, DM them and say, hey, can you watch my monologue? I guarantee at least one watch it, you know.
Are directors like the decision makers? Do they get to... Is there a difference between like the director and the casting person?
So the casting director obviously sends out a message to agencies or whatever and gets people to come in for the auditions, and then the casting director will sit in the audition and, you know, you decide if you get a call back or not. The director might be there as well, but the director actually directs the film. So if a director likes you and they work with you, they'll probably think of you for their next film. cool. You know, so they'll probably call you and be like, hey, I'm doing this film. I think it'd be perfect for it. And, you know, it's always good to be good, you know, cool with directors because they'll always think of you if anything else comes up, whatever. Casting directors too. So, you know, obviously casting directors cast films or productions or whatever. So it'll be good to be good with them as well. So both tag casting directors and directors, they both work hand in hand.
And finally, what is the worst advice you've ever received and what's the best advice you've ever received?
Worst advice? Ooh. That's a good one, actually. Worst advice. I actually have to think about that, you know, worst advice. I've received a lot of bad advice. What's the worst? What is the top?
I never remember it. So
yeah, no, I can't remember. I kind of just take, it goes in one ear. If I feel like it's negative, it kind of just goes in one ear and out the other. And it's like, yeah, you're blacklisted, so I'm not going to take advice from you again. That's it. I don't really keep it in my memory. Oh, I mean, no, I can't think of the worst advice. Best advice. Best advice. The only true failure is when you stop trying.
Nice. That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best.
As soon as you stop trying.
Yeah, like you can try failed. And fail. You can try and fail, but the only true failure is when you stop trying.
Nice. I like it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dorcas. This has been so much fun.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
I want to say a massive thank you to Dorcas for doing this episode with me. You can follow Dorcas on Twitter and Instagram at MsDSF. That's MS_DSF. Don't forget, Wannabe is going live for the very first time on June 2nd, and this will not be any ordinary live show, so please make sure you get your tickets to the Brand Builders Masterclass. It's going to be an afternoon of just leveling up your finance, your brand, your career, everything. Get tickets at wannabelive.eventbrite.co.uk. There's only a few days left. If you like how this podcast has made you think that you can do what I do or better, then you need to reach out to the Shoutout Network. To find out more about membership, visit shoutoutnetwork.co.uk. Be sure to follow Wannabe on Twitter and Instagram at Wannabe Podcast. I'm getting so many lovely comments on my pictures now, and this is so fantastic to see. And thank you to everyone who is sharing the show in your Insta stories. That is insane. I love seeing that. So thank you so much for sharing it with your friends. Please do continue to do so. I love it when the show grows. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please do leave a rating or a review on iTunes. If you have an iPhone or an Apple device, you just need to hit the stars and go. It's cool. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.